You know what, Chris? One of the greatest things about working at a school district is making good acquaintances with cafeteria ladies.
Oh, I agree. Cafeteria workers and maintenance workers, you definitely befriend and take great care of.
Absolutely, because today is hamburger day. And I'm one of those weird people that actually like school hamburgers, but I also like pickles. And so the cafeteria ladies give me extra pickles. And it's because I have helped them do many different things and or help them with different things. And so they help me out. And so I just think it's great that we can make friends like that because I like pickles and they like my help. So we're good.
I agree.
If we have this understanding on hamburger day, Matt gets extra pickles. And I don't even have to ask for it. It's just like I walk in the door and they just hand them to me.
Yeah, that's cool. Mine here is beefy nachos. So I always end up with lots of cheese. You know, I swear I can't even find the chips in them sometimes. There's so much cheese, but it's wonderful. And I know I'm going to die 20 years early because of it, but it's awesome.
It's really that government cheese. Because everything that they do at the school with cheese is good. It's like they make the best grilled cheese sandwiches here. And I'm pretty sure it's because of the cheese.
It's got to be. You know, I keep waiting, and I don't even know if these exist anymore, but I would love to see the big, round, red wheel of cheddar cheese rolling through the cafeteria.
Oh, that would be so awesome. My mom used to tell stories from my grandmother when she was a kid, and they got... For some reason, they were able to get the government cheese. And if she was like, your grandmother just loved that cheese. And it's like, I completely understand. It's good cheese.
Oh, yeah.
It's just something about that cheese. I don't know what it is. It's probably because it's full of butter and fat and sugar and everything else.
It's wonderful. It's still real. And one more thing that is really awesome about working at a school is time off.
Oh, yes.
You know, everybody probably noticed that we didn't have an episode last week. That's because we didn't have to work.
And it was so good. And it's like, we probably could have recorded an episode, but, you know, it was just really nice just to just kind of sit home and relax. I watched a lot of Netflix. I mean, I think I watched 2 seasons of shows on Netflix that whole week, and so it was just great.
Well, if we would have recorded, it would have had to been in the in and outs of my pecan pie comas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, and that's the good thing about Thanksgiving is all the food. Food is good at Thanksgiving. Turkey is an underappreciated dish. I don't understand why we have to have turkey twice a year. Why can't we have turkey every single week?
It's wonderful.
I love turkey.
You know, and our family does something really unique. We don't do normal turkey. We actually do barbecue turkey.
Oh, I bet that is so good.
It is so good. It's not dry. It's moist. And you actually want to eat it the next day.
How long does that take to sit on that smoker and cook?
Well, we actually don't smoke it. You cook it normally, like you would a normal turkey, and then you treat it like pulled pork.
Ah, okay.
So you pull it and shred it, and then you put the sauce that you've made in there, and then rebake it.
Ah, okay.
Oh, it's so good.
That does sound good. Now I'm hungry for turkey, and I don't think we have any turkey left, so.
I think they sell it still. They're probably discounted.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the cranberries. I don't like cranberry sauce. I'm not a real fan of that. But it's the turkey and the stuffing that really gets me. Love it. Good stuff.
Yeah, technology, right?
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's part of life. It's like, you know, working at a school and dealing with technology, you know, like you said, one of the good things about working at school is having that time off to be able to spend with your families. And not having to, I mean, we got that whole week off. I mean, and if we worked in like a plant or somewhere else, we might have only got like Thursday and Friday off or Wednesday and Thursday, depending on the work schedule. In fact, my neighbor actually had to work Thursday night. So, I mean, so that's one of the things we think about when we work in education, and it's one of the good things. But we do have a little bit of technology stuff to talk about today. A company that makes like internet filters, Barracuda, it looks like it's going to go private as a company. And it's being bought out. And we're actually seeing a lot of these companies being purchased now. And I don't know why that is. I mean, is it because they're just not doing well? They're just not selling because the market is so saturated with products that do virtually the same thing? And another thing that we're probably going to talk about is right now Nokia is denying rumors that they're buying Juniper. And so usually when a company is denying rumors that they're buying somebody, it usually means that they're buying somebody. So,
yeah, especially when they say we can neither confirm nor deny.
So,
well, you just did.
Yeah. So why do you think so many of these technology I mean, Ruckus Wireless was bought by, what was it? The
Brocade.
Brocade. And now Barracuda is, and Barracuda is actually being bought by a private entity, and it's actually going private. They make good stuff. It's just expensive. But
To Barracuda's credit, they have the best commercials because you know that they got that dun 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 dun. You know, the old Barracuda song. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of handy having that for marketing purpose. I wonder how much they had to pay for rights for that song.
Oh my, I can only imagine.
But so why do you think all these that we're seeing a lot of these technology purchases? Now, some purchases kind of make sense. It's like HP has wireless and it's garbage, so they buy Aruba, which is actually pretty decent. Some of those make sense, but like Nokia buying Juniper, to me, I mean, as an American, we don't really see either one of those companies all the time. And so, but over in Europe, that may be a big thing. But why do you think like technology companies are being bought and sold a lot lately?
Well, I think a lot of them are complementary technologies that they end up saying, hey, you know what, maybe we could do better together. So they end up merging instead of calling it a purchase. They merge their resources together. Like with, not with Barracuda, because that one's just some financial investors are buying it and bringing it private.
I guess maybe like Dell and EMC?
Yeah, I mean, Dell had a storage product. I mean, we all know about Equalogic.
Love Equalogic. Love it.
It's good stuff. But in large-scale enterprise, EMC was kind of like the go-to. So Dell couldn't really shoehorn their Equalogic product in there, and Michael Dell has lots of money, so he said, oh, okay, I'll just buy the one you're using already. So he bought that, and what I think is cool is he got a heck of a deal out of it, because he got VMware too. He got a controlling interest out of it anyway.
Yeah, and VMware has been bought and sold like 4 or 5 times in the last 6 years or something. It's just, yeah. VMware has changed hands so many times. In fact,
and you know what? It's very impressive. Even through all that, they still remain the top dog.
I wonder if they remain top dog because their sales are high because it costs so much. It's not that they have a real big customer base. It's just their cost is so high.
It could be that, but can you know how much it stinks to change platforms?
Oh yeah, because nothing's compatible. I mean, you'd have to like convert your VMs to like open VM format and then like import them into Hyper-V or KVM or whatever else you choose to go to.
Yeah.
Well, knowing KVM, there's probably a way that it can actually read VMware since it's open source.
Oh, yeah, it can. It can read VMDK. So. But like with the Juniper Nokia merger, I think one of the things that gets left out is they say Nokia, but Nokia is Nokia Ericsson. And Ericsson's real big in telco equipment as far as like wireless telco, like cellular connectivity, 4G, and all that stuff.
Yeah, I guess when we think of Nokia, we just think the last remnants of a company that Microsoft bought and murdered. So, I mean, I guess that when I guess as far as Americans go, because, I mean, back in the day of, like, the dumb feature phones or whatever, Nokia made some of the best handsets. I mean, they were great phones.
Mm-hmm. You know, honestly, when you told me about this, the first thought that came to my mind is, oh, that's awesome. We're going to be able to drop a Juniper switch from 20,000 feet and it still work.
That's funny.
Because, you know, you all remember those little brick Nokia phones. I think it was like 3110 or something like that. You'd drop them on the floor and they'd crack the tile.
Those were just, they were like industrial.
Man, they were great.
They're going to get branded Microsoft and then killed after they get tired of doing features for it.
Oh, goodness. I got so much to say on that I'm not going to because, you know, I actually switched to the Microsoft platform late in the game. And I actually liked Windows 10 Mobile. And I love my Lumia phone.
The Lumia phone, I guess we talked about this. It's like, for a while, the Lumia phone had like the best camera in a cell phone. And I think you said it was something because it had like 1,400 megapixels or something like that.
There was a model, the 1020, that was 41 megapixels back in like 2011.
I think the current iPhone still only has like 12 or 14 or 15.
Yeah. And then the last Lumia that I had was at 950, And it had a 21 megapixel camera, and it took beautiful photos. I loved it. But then Microsoft killed it.
Yeah, and it was like they had the best camera for a while, and then I think the iPhone 6 came out and just sort of started really blowing everybody out of the water with their camera technology, because that's when they introduced the 6 Plus with the image stabilization. I can't even say that word today.
You know, that's a fitting word to stutter on, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, and so, and the whole thing about the Microsoft phones, it's like, if I was thinking about getting another platform before iPhone, but I drink the Kool-Aid, I'm not switching. But if I was, if I had to switch, or if I was going to switch, and I'm no stranger to running a Windows mobile phone. I had a Motorola Q that was running like Windows Mobile 6.1. So I know I've been on the Microsoft train when it comes to mobile. But it's like, if you look at iPhone and you look at Android, I mean, just, I guess as a casual user, I mean, if you were to open like the main app screen or app drawer or whatever it's called on the Android phone, it's a grid of icons. That's essentially what it is. I mean, and that's the same thing with the iPhone. It's a grid of icons. The cool thing, the Microsoft phone gave you a grid of tiles, but the tiles could be like different sizes, and they had like live data working on them. And so to me, the Windows platform would be, if I was going to switch, would be a more compelling, from an aesthetic and kind of information, like glancing at it and getting information, a more appealing platform to go to as opposed to going Android, because Android to me just seems like more of the same old thing.
Yeah. And honestly, the feature that really sold me on Windows Mobile was Windows 10 Mobile with Continuum. I absolutely loved Continuum. I had the Continuum dock, and that was my primary computing device there at home for quite a while.
Continuum, that was the thing where you plug it into the dock, use a regular mouse, monitor, and keyboard.
Yeah, you can connect normal peripherals and whatnot and use it.
And it was basically like you were sitting at a desktop. Now, granted, it was an ARM-based, not a full version of Windows, but I mean, you could have done Office and everything else.
And honestly, I would compare it to what Windows 10S became. I mean, Continuum basically was the Windows 10S feature set.
You know, and that really is what I want. I want one device that it's like it's a phone, and then you pop it into something, and then you can sit at it and work at it like a computer. And I know Android, I think Samsung's doing it now, and I know Motorola tried it back in the day with, I think, a phone called, like, the Atrix. And we've probably talked about this
Motorola
many
Atrix.
Times. But, I mean, and nothing's really taken off. But I think if anybody's going to do it, I think it's going to be Android and not necessarily like Samsung, but I think Google could do it with the Pixel. I think they could pull it off with, like, the Pixel lineup or something like that, if they made like a phone that when you dropped it in this dock, all of a sudden it opened up Chrome OS. Because Chrome OS can run on Intel-based processors and ARM-based processors.
And that would be a very compelling device. And honestly, Samsung has done a really phenomenal job with DeX. I mean, it's great. I mean, it's like Continuum on steroids. It works better and faster, and you can run more things because you have the Android store on there. You can run whatever from Google Play.
Yeah. I think if anybody's going to pull it off where it's like becomes like kind of prevalent in some kind of industry, whether it's education or business, I think it will be Google if they could somehow get Chrome OS to work with it. And so basically it's a phone when it's a phone, because like you said, Chrome OS can run Android apps and do everything too now, depending, I guess, which model Chromebook you have. And so that to me, that's like, that's the secret sauce. And for a while, and it makes me wonder, because a while back there was that rumor that Chrome OS was actually going to go away, and everybody threw up that big old fit. It's like, no, you can't get rid of Chrome OS. All of these schools just invested thousands of dollars in all these Chromebooks, and they're working great. And now you're talking about getting rid of Chrome OS? It makes me wonder if maybe this is more along the lines of their thinking, that it's not so much Chrome OS was going to go away, but Android was going to evolve in kind of, the two platforms were going to merge together and become one.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, a device that was that, I mean, I would be sold on day one. I mean, I love Chrome OS. I think everybody knows this by now. I mean, in fact, I record on Chrome OS. Chrome OS is a great operating system. It's the only operating system that has not been hacked. I mean, it's great. Speaking of hacking, root with blank password. But
Yeah, I have patched my system. I am good. Do not try to access my MacBook Pro.
I did try to access your JAMP server just to give you a heads up.
Well, so I patched that too before file. I sent you that link, so we're good.
I bet you did. You knew I would do it.
And you know what's funny? Before you get back onto that, I did the manual install of the patch that Apple released, and they said, and Apple came out and said, look, you can install it now, but if you don't install it, like tomorrow, we're just going to automatically do it on everybody's system anyway, which really they should have done that automatically. They should have just installed it. Shouldn't even ask. They should have just done it. But I installed it manually, and then it installed itself again. I just thought that was kind of weird.
Is that why it broke file sharing?
Well, it broke file sharing even like the manual install. So, I mean, I think that happened like the same day that before the automatic patch went into effect.
Man, doesn't that make you wonder, how are these two things related? Because all they were doing was setting a password on the root account. I mean,
I don't know, man. It's crazy. What I want to know is, and this has kind of been a debate that's going on in the Twitter that I follow. Our two Twitters are kind of different because I follow kind of an Apple-based technology Twitter, and you're more of into the Bitcoin and the hack-in and the AMD stuff. So, but the big debate going on was this was supposed to be a Snow Leopard release for macOS. There were not a whole lot of brand new features that you were getting. It was all bug and patches and stuff like that. And here they are introducing a critical bug.
Yeah, I'd say this one was critical. What I'm really curious about, though, is how long has this bug been in there?
I don't know. In fact, and also along these lines, the beta preview that's out for like 10.13.2, I think, or 3, whatever's coming next, and the next update for High Sierra, it didn't actually get patched until today. Like, the patch that they released 2 days ago to fix the system didn't apply to the beta version of the OS. It only applied to the stable version that's released in the store. So everybody that was running the public beta or the developer beta was still vulnerable. And that's a lot of people because, I mean, they make it so easy to sign up for the public beta if you want to get all these new features or whatever. It's like they should have patched that too because you know that's still a good bit of their user base.
Yeah. One thing I'm interested in, and you can actually do this because you're on a Mac, is for you to like install High Sierra in your Fusion from the base and see if the root password's blank.
Like the Mac App Store version that's out like right now?
Yeah, like the original one, the original ISO, like .0.
Oh, I got you. I think I might actually have that somewhere.
Because I'm really curious, how long has this bug been in there? Because if it's been there from then, how long has High Sierra been out?
Since September 30th, I think, is when it came out.
Oh, that's it? I thought it had been out longer.
No, it's just since September.
I guess just because you run the beta, I hear about it more.
Well, I ran it in like a VM, so. But I'm trying to avoid beta trains because it's just too hard.
Oh, dude, the most difficult thing I ever did was run my cell phone on the fast ring of the Windows 10 Insider.
Oh, man, it's like I actually put the little $30 Windows Lumia that I bought, like the 650, I think is what it is. Bought it for like $30 from Best Buy, and actually put it on there because, well, mine only came with like Windows 8, I think, or 8.1. And so it's like if I wanted Windows 10, I had to put it on the Insider Tracker or whatever. It was like it was getting updates like every other day. It was just too much to keep up with. So now it's
dude,
in the drawer.
The fast ring, you'd not only get those updates, but a new thing would be broken every day. I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, I used to keep backups of it because I'd be factory restoring that phone at least once a week.
That's like when you hop on. It's exactly what happens when you hop on like the developer beta 1 of whatever iOS comes out. Something's always murdered.
God, it was painful. I mean, there was times that, like, I'd try to call my wife, and it'd be like, cannot complete call. What? You got, like, bars.
I had that problem a while back with AT&T. It's like no calls were going through. You actually had to, like, reboot your phone to actually make a phone call. It was like a nationwide outage of AT&T. It was crazy. We'll get back on your thought on your Chromebook, if you can still remember what you were going to talk about before we got side tangent on my Apple root password thing. But it's like, it's just amazing. And it's like, I've talked to many people, it's like, the iOS 11, it's so buggy. I mean, there's so many things that you would think that by now, they would have, like, screen transitions on the home screens to be smooth. I mean, that's not a complicated process. I mean, you would think by now that would be worked out. Why is that still a problem? Why is my phone, my Windows 7 Plus that's got a quad-core processor and, like, 2 gigs of RAM, why does it stutter when it's switching between two pictures of gridded icon? I mean, I don't understand. I mean, the root
yeah, it's not even live tiles. It's gridded icon.
Yeah, it's gridded icon, static images. Why? Why do they release a software update with a root password that's blank or that's open for everybody? Why is AT&T having nationwide outages? Why is Spectrum feeding me a TV show with a background track and not the audio track where I can actually hear dialogue? I don't understand why people are having just, it's like everything has just gone down as far as like, it's almost like they got rid of all their QoS people.
Well,
or their
I
QS
think it's
or
just,
QA, that's what it is, QA. They're gotten, QA people.
Yeah, they're quality assurance. But it's gotten so complicated. I mean, like, we'll say on that, your Spectrum one, because that one's just kind of funny, because I know you wanted to watch the show and you only had the background track.
I know, it was like, what is going on here? I mean, it was every device. It was the computer, it was in the browser, it was on the iPad app, it was on the iPhone app, it was on the TV box, and it was at my parents' house, which is a completely different location. And so it was like,
next time that happens, and then there will be a next time, turn on SAP and see if the other audio channel has it. Because it's just so complicated now. We're sending like 4 audio feeds down with all these shows now because of all the different languages and audio types. So, I mean, things are just going to go wrong. I mean, everything's so complicated now. I mean, there's 100 moving parts for everything.
And to top it all off, it was like, it was that show. And at some point, I went on to watch something else like on Netflix or a movie or something because it's like, I want to watch the show, so I'm not going to get spoiled by watching it with no dialogue. But I was like, well, I'm going to see if it's been fixed now. So I hopped back to the show real quick, and all of a sudden I can hear dialogue. I'm thinking, all right, it's fixed. Well, the show that comes on right after it on the same channel, I was like, well, maybe I'll get to watch it. Nope, same problem. It's like, what is happening?
That's too funny.
It's like everything is just buggy and crazy. And, you know, that's just kind of how my week has been. I mean, everything is just sort of falling apart this week.
It has been a rough transition week. I mean, I don't know why that week off at Thanksgiving. I mean, everything came back to just bleh, crazy. I mean, and then we got EOC testing next week.
Oh, I know. And it's like, and that's like the only thing that I am prepared for is the EOC testing. I mean, today I have had like 4 or 5 work orders that all involve projectors. And it's like, the projector keeps turning off. Well, so I just go reset the lamp hours. Why are 3 projectors having this problem? Another one was another problem. But it's like, why are 3 projectors all of a sudden having this problem? Well, you go look at the lamp hours, and it's like 3,800 hours. It's like, how is this possible? And it's like,
yeah,
my
repeating issue this week has been keyboards. Yesterday, I replaced in the end, Matt, 14 Lenovo N22 keyboards.
But you did do like the whole keyboard, right? It wasn't
the
like
whole keyboard.
Just the individual keys.
Yeah, you know, Lenovo had that issue, and I called them out on it. And I said, look, guys, this is bad. You got to fix this. You already owned up to the problem. Now own up to it with the customers.
Yeah.
And they did. And they sent me boxes of keyboards for when they go out to replace. And it made me think much highly of Lenovo. Because I was going to start looking at another vendor. But because they owned up to it with me and fixed the problem, I'll quote Lenovo out again.
And see, and I have that problem too with the Chromebooks. But it's like, at first I was like, you know what? These kids are playing like coolmath.com and they're just, because I'll watch them in like the computer lab on the Windows machines and they're just sitting there banging those keyboards, knocking them arrows, whatever game they're playing on CoolMath. I'm thinking, okay, so that's what they're doing. But you know, when 1, 2, okay, it's kids tearing them up. But you know, when 3, 4, 5, 6 keyboards start to fall apart, you're starting, okay, maybe it's not the students. Maybe there's like a defect in this keyboard.
Yeah, I agree. And there was. The N21s and 22s had some keyboard problems. The 23s actually have locking keys now.
Yeah, and the main set that I have problems with are N21s, and they're apparently not included in Lenovo's replacement thing, because apparently it's just the N22s. I'm like, okay, then give those kids those, and so they can break those. Stop breaking the N21s.
I wonder if the N22 keyboards that I have would fit yours, N21s.
I think I actually tried this. I think they use a different switch type between the 21s and 22s.
Okay.
And in fact, with the 22s, I think they actually use 2 different switch types then, because it's like you have a white bracket and you have a black bracket.
Yeah.
So.
But I just replaced the whole dang thing because, you know what? The last time I replaced one key, it took me 45 minutes to replace that one key.
And you need
it
like
takes me 2 to do the whole keyboard.
Tiny tweezers to get it to work, and I ended up breaking it. I have to, if I buy a key to replace one key, I usually have to buy 2 because I'm going to break the first one. But that's just my family, because my dad's the same way. My mom would be, always makes the joke, if we go to AutoZone to buy a part for the car, we might as well buy two because your dad's going to break the first one.
That's funny.
So, I mean, maybe that's in my genetics, that that's just what's going to happen.
We'll just call you Wreck-It Ralph.
But it's like, I had a battery go out in a UPS that's only like 2.5, 3 years old. And it's like, we were doing a walkthrough for this E-rate projects or whatever. And it's like, all of a sudden I'm hearing this screaming high-pitched beep coming out of the library IDF. It's like, what is that noise? And I open that cabinet. It's like, there's the UPS is up there screaming. So I have to like climb over a whole bunch of stuff that people have shoved up in that closet because they had to make room for a classroom. And it's like, bad battery. I'm thinking, okay. So, and then I had to like, you're up there with that piercing sound in your face. And it's like, you just want to get out of there. That room is hot. The door's open. So it's everybody else is mad because they can hear the beeping noise. And I'm like sitting there trying to figure out how to turn that beep off. And I finally figured it out. And so I go out to the hallway where we actually have the junior high office is actually in the hallway outside the old library. I was like, how long has that been beeping? She's like, oh, it's been beeping for a while. I'm like, well, how come nobody told me? I would have come found out what was going on. So it's like I got a dead battery. I mean, everything still powers up through it. The batteries just did. And then yeah. I had a power supply die in one of my iSCSI switches. And that was kind of interesting calling Dell. And it's like, hey, look, I got a dead power supply. Okay, well, you got this type of support, so let's send you over to those people. And so that guy answers the phone. It's like, okay, well, I got a dead power supply. Well, you have this type of support. Let me send you to these people. And I'm thinking, oh, are you serious? And then, so I'm talking to this other guy that's the pro support department or whatever. And he's like, well, it looks like that's all one big unit. So I think we're going to have to send out another switch. I'm like, are you serious? Dude, I pulled it out and reseated it. Just send me another power supply. Well, I'm not finding a part number. Well, here's the part number. Oh, there it is. It's like, why am I having to do your job? It's so funny.
You're like, come on now. I just saved you a ton of money.
Yeah, it's just, and then, you know, things just happen. It's just crazy. And then on top of all that, having to deal with all these vendors coming in to do these walkthroughs, and because it's just that E-rate process. It's like you have to talk to them. Whether you want to, whether you really want to work with them or not.
Every single one of them that wants to respond.
I mean, newsflash, here's a spoiler. We don't want to deal with some vendor that we've never really heard of before, but we have to. So, I mean, we have to listen to them. And if they come in like a cost-effective manner, it's like, hey, we might have a new vendor. So, I mean.
Oh, gosh. It's just. You hadn't had any people with yellow shirts show up yet, have you?
No, actually, here's the deal. Here's the deal. Here's a little insider story. From what I understand, they are no longer hiring cable technicians to work in Texas.
That's because they were so awful at it.
Oh, they were terrible. And what's really funny is I actually had a job with them for like 2.5 days.
Don't admit that.
It's really, and you know, that's one of the reasons why that company leaves a sour taste in my mouth, because of what they did to me.
Well, mine is, I always ran into issues where we would have a project where we would quote a fiber run, and it would be indoors, and it would be only running 1 gig. So they were like, eh, we'll run copper anyway.
They did that. No. They did that for an outdoor run fiber at another school that I used to contract with when I was working at the service center. They ran it as a Cat 6 cable as opposed to a fiber cable outside. And then they ran like just random normal what seemed like fiber patch cables outside on top of awnings. And not like outdoor rated cable. It's horrible. I'm surprised it worked. I'm surprised like lightning just didn't come and strike that stuff just every time it had a chance.
Oh, man,
I mean,
they
just did. And what's really bad is when I actually used them as a vendor before I knew better, they actually did good work for me. I mean, I really can't complain about the work that they did for me. So, I mean, I don't know what happened. Maybe somebody retired and the person that kind of took over the project management was just not very good.
Yeah. No bad days, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's just been a week, man. It's always one thing after another around here, it seems.
Yeah.
And what really gets me worried is, like, I had this power supply go bad. I had this battery go bad. I didn't mention, but I had a hard drive go bad in a server that I then almost murdered the RAID on. So I almost lost a whole bunch of computer images, which, you know, hindsight's not a real big deal, but I'm glad I didn't lose them. But it's like, I am wondering now if this is the beginning of a long run of issues that I'm about to have because my buildings had water in them.
Yeah, and you probably had a lot of power fluctuation, too.
I really didn't. That's the thing. I really didn't have a lot of power fluctuation. The In fact, the power, I think, went off for maybe like a day, and then it came back on, if that.
Well, that's not bad.
Even if it went off at all, I'm not really sure. And so I really don't understand why that UPS battery died, because it really hasn't had that much of a workout. I mean, my power is a lot better than your power. But everybody's power is a lot better than your power.
And you know what's funny? We buy our power from the company that does your power.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's crazy. But, you know, everything comes up that one highway that come into Buna. So, I mean, it's like if anything happens on that highway, everything goes down.
From here to Jasper,
it's like
it'll go down. I mean, it's
come
just
multiple you ways. Know, our,
yeah, when you told me you had a battery go dead after 3 years, I'm like, dang, I wish I could keep one alive for 3 years.
I mean, it's weird. I probably can count on one hand how many times that closet lost power over those 3 years. And most of them were probably because I did it. I pulled the power on it for whatever
Let's
reason.
Let's see. At the beginning of this school year, and you're going to think this is crazy, Matt, the first week of school, you know, before the hurricane, we lost power to our entire high school twice a day, every day.
That sounds
first
about right.
Week, we lost power 10 times. It was like, golly, come on, guys.
But you,
this is just bad.
You did mention to me that you do have a generator now.
At least I do, and that generator sure got to work out.
Because I remember back, the person that was there before you, I actually went out because he had like a power failure and he had a bunch of stuff go horribly wrong. And and the superintendent kind of drove up in his little golf cart or whatever, and I just kind of casually mentioned, it's like, you know what? I just, as much power problems as y'all have out here, I don't know why y'all don't have a generator. And he's like, you know, we probably ought to look into that. So I'm going to take a little bit of credit for you actually having a generator, because I think I may have been the one to actually plant that seed in your superintendent's mind.
We actually what we ended up getting, when they built this new building, it's an emergency operations center for the county too. So we actually have a whole building generator. It doesn't power everything in the building, but it has certain places that it does power. And outlets in key places.
Well, that's good.
And because it works great. It's one of those large Generacs.
Because it's for the county, did the county actually help fund some of that?
No.
Oh, of course not.
Well, we know how that is. Hey y'all, since you was already building it, we'd like to go ahead and use that.
Well, hey, you saw that fancy new gym that High Island got.
Ooh, did they get paid for federally or something?
Well, FEMA basically paid for, because High Island needs a shelter. And like,
yeah, they
there's
do.
There's nowhere to shelter in High Island. But I mean, they
because
call
High
it High Island,
Island
for
is,
a reason.
Believe it or not, High Island's really high up.
Yeah, they call it High Island for a reason. But they built a gym. Well, they built a shelter that's going to act as a gym when it's not being used as a shelter, that can withstand like Category 5 winds. I mean, that's insane. So I'm like, why can't y'all throw me some money and help me rebuild my elementary school a little bit faster? But this
no
is
kidding.
This is apparently a project that they had been working on, I think, since probably Rita, and that was back in 2005.
So I guess it kind of falls along the FEMA Dome projects.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of wondering, it's like, am I going to have to wait 15 years or 10 years before I can have my elementary school back?
Let's hope not.
Is that how long this process is really going to take?
I mean, the tarpatorium can only last for so long.
Well, the tarpateria, I think, is gone. We've pretty much got we got everybody out of the tarp. I mean, now, granted, we've got people shoved into closets that they probably shouldn't be shoved into, but we got people where there normally isn't classrooms. We have classrooms, let's put it that way.
That's awesome.
The drill team has nowhere to practice, and they actually have nowhere to get dressed either. So both of those locations have been turned into classrooms.
Well, that's cool. At least things are moving forward.
But
for
you know, in a bit of good news, I did get my wireless situation figured out, where I was trying to do dynamically assigned VLANs based on radius authentication. I did get that to work out. It took having some outside help to figure it out, but it's working. I got it turned off now because I'm not ready to switch to it yet. But I'm thinking.
But you know what? Even with that outside help, remember, you did everything else right. It was just one little tiny thing.
Yeah, and you know, it's always one, and it always goes back to, hey, did you look in the event viewer? You know, every time, it's like, I don't know why I always forget to check the event logs. I don't know why. That's just the one thing that I always forget to do. It was that and Traceroute were always my biggest things. It's like, well, did you do a Traceroute? No, I forgot. I don't think about this thing. I don't think about doing Traceroute and I don't think about doing Event Viewer. And it's like, it's Event Viewer can tell you everything, really. I mean, anytime you're having a problem, it's pretty much, now granted, it a lot of times it'll give you some weird cryptic, this is what's breaking message, and you have no idea what it means, but it really does give you a lot of information. And I don't know why I always forget to go to the Event Viewer.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like when we have no problems. We never start at the simplest problem. I mean, you got a machine not connecting to the internet, so where do we start? Oh, let's go rebuild the network driver, not check the cable.
Yeah, rebuild the IP version 4 stack.
Yeah, and not check that the cable's not plugged in.
Don't! It's like, and you know, it's like the teachers do that too, because it's like they'll put in a work order. It's like, hey, nothing's showing up on the projector, and I walk in there and plug the VGA cable back into the wall. It's like,
what did you do? Don't worry about it.
I mean, it's like, hey, you got this shelf here. It just kind of bumped into this cable. You just need to watch that. It's like, or my projector just turned purple. Well, okay, let me go in there and tighten the cable up. It's like, oh, I remember you did that last time. Okay, well, then why did you call me? But the plan is, after we get back from Christmas break, I think I'm going to eliminate my staff wireless and my student wireless SSIDs and have both of them connect to the same one, because now, depending on who connects and what their account is a member of which domain group, they get the right VLAN. And so I can eliminate having two SSIDs.
Yep. Because what is the best practice is always have less than 4, just because of the beacons.
Well, I have 5 right now. And it's like, I just need to get these down. Now, granted, not all of them are being broadcasted everywhere, but I really need to get those lowered. And then I'm eventually probably going to get rid of the legacy pre-shared key one that, like, Chromebooks and iPads connect to, once I can try to see if I can't figure out this, the way our internet filter watches radius logs and the way it uses the Chromebook app to authenticate its users to be able to tell who's logged into the Chromebook. I need to make sure that the app overrides the radius authentication so that all the Chromebooks don't show up in the filter logs as all the same user, because that's not going to do me any good.
Well, one thing to watch out for is I did that last year, and I ended up having to put my super secret pre-shared network back in because of smart TVs and stuff like that.
Well, I am going to leave one in. I call it my utility wireless, because it's for things like thermostats, smart TVs, those sorts of things. I am going to have to leave that one in. So, I mean,
that's exactly what mine's for, those kind of crazy devices that just won't support modern authentication.
I wish... And for me, it would be okay because I could do it. But, like, the maintenance people, they're the ones that take care of the thermostat, and so they have the password to connect to that, which is, like, real clever password. It's kind of a dumb password anyway. But it's like, I wish there was a way that I could, like, click the box that says don't broadcast, or the one that says keep it hidden or whatever, and so they would have to, like, type in the SSID too, but I don't want to do that. So basically nobody would see it unless they're running, like, a scanner. But I don't want to put that extra step of work on them. I just want to be able to pick
it. And that's actually what I do with mine, is I don't broadcast the SSID, but then again, I'm the one connecting everything.
Yeah, they make you do all that stuff. So, I mean, it's a little bit easier when you have to do all that stuff. But I mean, some people, they don't have time for that. They just want to be able to pick it. They know the picket and they know to put in the password. So
yep.
They probably don't even like the password, probably because it's a little bit, because they have to switch between numbers and letters, and probably on that little thermostat that means
why
they
gotta be like this.
Shift key. Yeah, it's like, you know, they're gonna complain. That's the nature of the beast.
I mean, you're like, I can't have it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean,
yeah, and I mentioned to you the other day, it's like, you remember the good old days when we just had open Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
No passwords. What, don't you remember how good life was then?
I mean, the only thing we worked on was keeping old servers alive.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you got a blinking yellow light. Let's pop the drive out, pop it back in. But I don't want to talk about that anymore right now. don't want to talk about RAID problems. But I mean, yeah, it's like, it is the good old days. But it's just been a week. But I'm hoping next week will be a little bit better. I know I have 2 walkthroughs scheduled for more E-RAID stuff on top of the testing. And then we have this train. Last year we purchased this like online training course called Stormwind, which is like really good. It's like, I wanted to get my CCNA, and then I went through these little courses, never went and took the certificate, just never really found the time or things came up or whatever. But it's like, I took this Cisco class. It was like 4 days a week, 2 hours a day for 2 weeks or whatever. And so, and it's like, it was to prepare you for the Cisco test. And so it was like, it was really good. And so we were actually going to sign up for it again this year because I wanted to go through like the security and the wireless classes to make sure that I'm doing things right, because I did learn a lot from those CCNA prep classes or whatever, because it's like, and I actually changed a whole bunch of the way I was doing things based on those. And so, to get to the long story, they actually, because of our situation, the company actually gave it to us free this year, which is really great. Shout out to Stormwinds for that, because I will definitely be signing on for another year just because they hooked me up this year. But this week actually started the security class, and so I've been able to go to like one class because I just haven't been able to fit the rest of it in. The time has just been crazy, but it's mind blowing, and it's a bit overwhelming even just thinking about the security standpoint, just from what I sat through on day one, because you can't really know like what you're. I mean, yeah, he can. It's like, hey, if you want to block this, you can do this in your Cisco thing, or do this in your ASA, or whatever. But he's kind of starting with like, hey, this is a DDoS exploit. This is how a DDoS exploit works. Or this is what a denial of service, well, same thing, distributed, dynamic.
Personally, I really like that approach to teaching, because, I mean, what better way to know how to prevent something than to know exactly how something works?
Yeah, and so, like, I'm listening about all these exploits and algorithms and triple DES and AES and DES, and it's like my mind just sort of hurts. It's just I go home at the end of the day and I have a headache just because it just hurts, because that's just been the kind of week it is. And it's like I'm kind of scared now. It's like, what if these kids are doing these rootkit scans and all this other stuff?
What if they found Metasploit?
And he is legitimately dropping names of like Linux distros that you can go download and run probably on a live
Cali
CD to be able to like do some of these exploits, and I'm like, why?
Let's go ahead and do it. Kali and Metasploit.
Yeah, Kali Linux. That's exactly the one that he mentioned.
I mean, that is a blast to play with, by the way.
But, oh man, I remember when I was at the service center, I was at one of the school districts. They had this one kid, he was kind of a bit of a smart aleck, and he actually booted some Linux environment, and he like literally pulled everybody's password out of the domain. I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
You're like, stop it.
And it's because apparently somebody had gotten a hold of a domain admin account, and so I had to like reset all those passwords that had domain admin rights. And so I was like, what are you doing? Why are you doing
what?
This?
I bet that school must have upgraded from NT4 to Active Directory, because NT4 would actually let you store passwords in clear text.
That may have been what happened, because he was able to pull like all of these passwords. And it was just, it's like ridiculous. And so now I'm like freaked out. Like, am I doing enough to protect myself from things? I mean, I'm worried about stopping VPNs from happening, but should I be like doing port security and radius authentication on even letting the computer connect to the network on a wired port? And it's like, what? Am I doing enough now?
I've done both of those in the past. When I worked at the university, we did port security there. And in that environment, it made sense, but half of my tickets were re-enabling ports because someone had walked in and plugged something in and it shut down the port. So it's double-edged. I mean, yes, you will get more secure. Yes, you will create a lot more work for yourself, too.
But it's like, do we really have the time to do that sort of stuff?
Not here.
I mean, you spent, 2-3 days trying to pull a filter log? I mean, and just it's so convoluted the way you had to pull your log. You actually had to put in a support ticket to figure out how to do it.
You know what? They never answered me.
Oh, really?
But I think it might be because I was very snarky in the way I wrote that email.
But it's like, I mean, it's like we don't really have time to. I mean, that's a full-time job. I mean, we've talked about that. We talked about how like mobile device management is a full-time job. I mean, running a Google domain, like the Google admin console, doing it like probably the right way that you're supposed to do it, and monitoring devices and pushing out apps and all this stuff, that's pretty much a full-time job. I mean, doing network security, full-time job, server management, full-time job, virtualization management, full-time job, network configurator, full-time job. I mean, all of these things are basically full-time jobs, but because we're like one person and we have to do, we're like the jack of all trades, I guess. Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
Isn't that how it goes or something like that?
That's the expression, and that's how I feel a lot of the time.
And so it makes me wonder, it's like, what am I neglecting because I've got to do so much other stuff.
Yeah.
But that's just the nature of the beast of education. It's like, well, is my network secure enough? Because a lot of times it's like I throw in a switch and I will not touch that switch until I pull it out and replace it with something else. I mean,
sometimes that happens.
I mean, that's just the way it goes. I mean, I'm not checking logs on that switches to make sure that it's having power failures or any of that stuff. And like I should be. I mean, how many times as network admins do we even test restore on our backups? I mean, I finally got around to testing a restore on Duplicati. And I actually got rid of it because it didn't work. And so,
I want that product. Speaking of Duplicati, that product is so close to being perfect. But dang it, Google. And you know, the problem is, it's not Duplicati. It's the hackery method that it's using to connect to these cloud services. It can break at any moment. And it does.
The OAuth.
But man, it's so close. But I'm not running Duplicati right now. I just can't.
Yeah, in fact, we've actually been playing with your backup, I think. You are backup. And I actually have it running, and I think it's running great. And so I think it's probably going to meet. Because I was kind of using, because my whole thing is I don't have the funds. I mean, I don't really have the hardware ability to run local backups. I have been, because my internet connection is so fast and so reliable, I've been pretty much relying on my cloud backup service as my backup service because it's been rock solid. Everything's working great. I rarely get any errors on any of that stuff. The restores that I've had to do have worked great. The only thing I'm really backing up is like people's data, like home directories and stuff, all the student information. And now I'd be a completely different story if the SIS system was on in-house.
Yeah,
I mean, completely different story. But now it's like my main thing is I got to get data. And that was one of the things during the hurricane. It's like I had my home directory. So if I had to rebuild the domain, that's fine. I can do that. That's a lot of work. But in the grand scheme of things, I still have all the data that I can pull down and put wherever I want. So, yeah. I mean, and that's really all I got. I mean, that's really all I need. And so I've been fully relying on my cloud backup. But, you know, just it's like I've been doing some thinking and some soul searching, I guess. It's like, you know, I really ought to have something local in place. And so I was using Duplicati because Duplicati can back up to anything that you want it to. It can back up to Google Drive. It can back up to Dropbox, Box, local stuff, network shares, wherever. And so I was like, well, I could use Duplicati to back up to Google Drive, replace my cloud solution, and back up to a local thing. And basically, when it's running its backup, it sends it to two locations as opposed to having two products running. And so... That's what I was kind of looking at.
You know, and I feel in the future it's going to get a lot better, but it is an alpha stage, a lot of those features that we were using.
Yeah.
I mean, and what I fell back on is I'm doing my PowerShell scripts to do image level backups now, and don't tell Google, but I got Drive Sync and backup to take the VHD files.
Hey, that's awesome.
So, yeah, don't tell them.
I might have to borrow those scripts and see if I can't do some of the similar things. But it's like I was hoping that Duplicati would have been my one-stop shop whenever I did have the ability to do, basically I'm going to really have the ability to do local backups again whenever I refresh my server line, which is probably going to be the next year or two, and so I'll have a place to actually store local backups that have enough storage in it to be able to do it. But now I've been looking at this year backup and like some of the things that it's doing where it's running, I'm basically now using like the local storage on my VMware host. All my VM data is stored on the SAN, and so I'm basically using the local storage on the server to where I'm storing the year backups or whatever, and it's running great. I mean, like I told you, I said, this is basically Time Machine for Windows. And you're like, yeah. Well, they've always had that in Windows backup or whatever.
Let me have my moment, right?
Yeah, it's like, let me have my moment, because that's literally how Time Machine is. You click on the backups folder, and you have a bunch of folders with dates and times on them, and then you have a folder with an arrow for a link that says current or latest or something like that, and that is exactly what your backup has. And to me, Time Machine is one of the best and easiest backup methods ever created, because it's just seamless. I mean, the only thing you do is just add your exclude. And it's like, and that's essentially what your backup does. But not only that, it does like some built-in Windows things. Like by default, it will back up SQL databases, SQL Server databases. And so I've got it set to back up. And so when I kind of want your backup to become my one-stop shop, because you and I talked about, it's like, hey, whenever I have the ability, I'm going to throw a box at your place and do some stuff in, with your network where I can actually send, because you over the year backup, you can actually send it over the internet and to it to another server. And so
and you see, can be my cloud backup. And for your backup, I actually run the internet mode locally in-house, because where I'm backing up to is actually across a routed connection already. So none of the auto discovery stuff works for me.
Yeah, but it does work for me. And if you want to try your backup, that really is really pretty cool. You just literally install the server, set it up, install the client, and it just sort of discovers itself, and you don't really have to do anything.
Yeah, and it's a UR backup, not YOUR, just UR. It's a really cool product.
And it's great, and I'm hoping that like we can do what we talked about, where you put a box at me and I put a box at you, and we basically take advantage of this gig connection between us. And you become my cloud backup, and I become your cloud backup. And so, and then we're not, then that saves us a little bit of money every year to keep from having to pay a backup provider online, like Mosey or Backblaze or whoever.
And heck, I was thinking, I was talking to you about using something like IPOP to do the connection between the hosts, so you don't even have to worry about actually opening up your network to each other. You can just have those two boxes need to communicate over an IP over peer connection.
Yeah, and so it's like, that's what we need to do. We need to figure out a way that we can do things cost effective, help each other out. I mean, because I mean, really, who else is going to help the school district besides the school district? I mean, if we could be self-sufficient, maybe we can make some changes around here.
Yeah, if we could show that we turn a profit.
Yeah, maybe we can get a little bit more money.
Yeah. It's like hey, but I do have something. I want to brag on my kids in my class.
Okay.
I'm very proud of them today. We went over subnetting in IPv6 today.
Oh, just,
and they all got it.
Well, they're
on
a lot better than me.
Well, we did teach IPv4 subnetting for the third time this week. But they did get IPv6 the very first time. I am so very proud of them. It was awesome.
That's one of the factors that has kind of kept me from going to take my Cisco exam, because they've added IPv6 to it, and I am just, I mean, it takes me, it's like, if you were to ask me right now to subnet something in IPv4, I couldn't do it. Now, if I kind of go back, read through my notes, I can do it for about a week. It's like, but as soon as I don't do it, it's that whole you don't use it, you forget it kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And so I suffer from that a lot. I don't know if it's because I just... It's hard. I don't get it. I was the same way with algebra. I mean, I had my algebra teacher, who actually is teaching here now. I actually can walk down the hall and see her, which is kind of crazy. She used to say that if you can't factor an equation in algebra, you're going to struggle with math for the rest of your life. To this day, I still can't factor. I still don't understand.
You know, Matt,
it is, I mean,
I'm going to blame a lot of your problems on you're getting old.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's a lot too, but it's like, I don't know if I struggle with numbers. I mean, math has never really been a strong suit of mine. I never really liked math. That's kind of why I started college at computer science, and then I took a class called discrete math, and it was so discrete, they gave you symbols but didn't define the symbols, and so I'm like, okay, I can't do this. My brain can't function this way. And so I don't know if that's one of the reasons why I struggle with subnetting. I'm just going to say it is, because I'm not a real math fan. I'm not a math whiz. I mean, I still have to use a calculator for a lot of basic things, but that's just me, I guess. I excel at some other things, but when it comes to math, it's no go. But
well, I'll send you Fikes's magical, super simple subnet calculator tool.
But it's like, I can do subnetting, like I can sit and listen to somebody kind of explain it again, and I'm good for about a week and a half. And I can do practice subnets, come up with my own things, and I got this. Man, this is so easy. I don't understand why I struggle with this. And then 2 weeks later, I'm just like, I have no idea what I was doing. And so, and then it's like when that Cisco class threw IPv6 on, it's like my brain just melted. I mean, it's just.
For all those people that are listening, that may be also doing the Cisco stuff. Man, IPv6 looks very scary at first. Once you learn the few things that it actually did change, all your old information works again. They just made it easier.
And to me, having so many more numbers and with the addition of letters, to me, it just, I mean, because that's when I started struggling with math, is when they added letters in algebra. It's like, there's not supposed to be an A in math. And so why am I seeing F's and A's and E's and all these letters in a
Yeah, the problem is once you start seeing all those letters in math, you started seeing them, those F's on your report card, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, we're never that bad. I was able enough to, I was able to suck up enough to actually pass the class. So, but and college, I actually took to class with my then girlfriend, now wife, and so I basically just cheated. No lie, not even going to try to deny it. I just cheated off of her.
It's much more common than you think, because my wife did my English homework in college, and I did her geometry. So
it's kind of a trade-off, right?
Oh yeah, I can barely speak, but she's a brilliant writer, and well, she has no spatial reasoning.
I mean, it's like my wife's kind of the same way. It's like she's real good at math, but see, her mom was a math teacher, taught math, and like taught high school math or whatever. So maybe it's just kind of genetics when it comes to that. But it's like me, there. And what's funny is my brother's an accountant. He's a CPA. He lives by numbers. He loves numbers. I can't. Not happening. Just so funny. And it's like, why am I in a technology profession? Because everything you do has with numbers. When you're talking algorithms and encryption methods and all this other stuff, it's all got to do with numbers. And I'm like,
totally side tangent, but my phone just alerted me.
Oh.
Speaking of cryptography and numbers, Bitcoin's almost up to 11,000 again.
Hey, here you go. It'll probably be, I bet it'd be 20 probably by the end of next year.
The prediction is 27.
Oh.
So
it's just crazy. Too bad. It's like the what was it last night, Wednesday night, Thursday? I don't remember. Whenever, I think it was last night, Big Bang Theory came on, and it was like, it was an episode all about Bitcoin, and it was kind of like a flashback to like 7 years ago. It was like, hey, because they were reading, it's like at the time, well, when the show writers, they wrote that Bitcoin just made $5,000, so they were a little behind, well, halfway behind. And so it was just kind of really funny how it all timed together. And it's like they were talking about, hey, you remember that time we mined some Bitcoin back 7 years ago or whatever? And so they were chasing down this old laptop or whatever. And it was just really funny. And then
you want to know something really funny? When I was at the service center, sorry, Kyle, if you're listening.
Oh, you ran the whole lab as a Bitcoin miner.
Yeah, I ran that Mac lab as a Bitcoin mining operation there for about a month and a half. And back then it was a little easier to mine. And I got about 4 or 5 Bitcoin in there, but then it went to like a penny a coin, and I deleted the wallet.
Oh, you could have been like super
rich. Yeah, it wouldn't have been a bunch, but I mean, heck, that would have been, what, $60,000?
Yeah, it could have paid half my house off.
I know.
I took it. So what I want to know is, and it's like, let's talk a little bit about Bitcoin to kind of wrap up this episode. I read an article. That I didn't really read the article, I read the headline, because it then got kind of scary. That basically, and I'm going to say the double N word, the net neutrality word, and I don't want to talk about that, because that's all about to come, that's a whole other subject. And I know I said we were going to talk about it, but I just want to avoid it. But they said, I read something that as soon as net neutrality goes away, I heard that a bunch of these ISPs are going to try to like stop the mining from happening. And so it makes me wonder, it's like, okay, so the government's getting out of the internet service providers, but at what point is the IRS going to step in to this whole
Bitcoin? They already did.
They already did?
And in fact, this week, they put an injunction on Coinbase, which is one of the largest cryptocurrency trading companies.
Is that the thing where I saw that they have to like give up the information on all their customers?
Yeah, for anyone who had done over $20,000, they have to submit it to the IRS for the past 3 years.
I only have like $3.26 in your Ethereum, so I'm okay.
No, that's okay. But yeah, I mean, that opens up a lot of it's going to open up a lot of different things, because the thing that I look at it is, if they're looking at, hey, well, you've invested $20,000 in Bitcoin, we want to tax you on that. Well, the moment they tax you, they're acknowledging it as a competing currency, which is illegal in U.S. law to have competing currencies.
Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting.
I think there's going to be some really interesting court cases coming
up
soon.
And let's put it this way. Okay, in like your situation, you when you started, like before you deleted that wallet, now it may be different now, but you when you originally started, and probably a lot of people that are in it, they didn't originally put any money into it.
No.
This is all like doing whatever mining is. And maybe one day we can do an episode where you explain it better without hurting yourself or hurting me. Just go easy with the numbers. And so, is it really? I mean, they're not. I guess it's almost like be the same as like getting taxed on the money that you win at Wheel of Fortune. I mean,
yeah. Or what I think I equate it to a lot is stocks. I mean, it's earned income off of a stock purchase.
Yeah,
it's a realized profit.
And so it's like, but can they really tax it until you cash it out?
I don't think they can, and I think that's what's going to be interesting.
I don't think that's what they need to do. I mean, because if because now you can buy into Bitcoin like you can stocks now, right? Like,
oh,
I can
yeah, you've
take,
always
I can
been
take
able
$6
to.
And go buy $6 worth of Bitcoin and get like 0.00000000.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it's like, okay, so the $6 that I just spent, or 600 or 6,000 or whatever, that money's already been taxed.
Yes.
I earned it from my job. It's been taxed. The government got their cut. That is my money. And so I buy that $6,000. And so, and that $6,000 or $6 whatever has turned into $14,000 in Bitcoin. I don't think the government should be able to touch that until you cash it out.
And I don't think they're going to try. I think they may be using this, of course, to tax those people that did realize some profits on it, but more a sense to gain an information of how the market's actually doing.
Yeah. I mean, they basically just need to treat it like a stock. I mean, you sell a stock,
yeah, I mean,
you make some money, you got to pay your taxes on it. That's what.
And I'll be honest, I mean, I do mine, and I can see why the ISPs would be a little concerned with it, because, I mean, last month at my house, I used 1.2 terabytes of data.
And it's mainly from the mining and Netflix, right?
Yeah, Netflix and mining. That's basically all that happens at our house.
So, I mean, and it's just... That's just weird. And so, and really what's funny, to go back to your original story about doing it at the service center, it was like you were running a mining operation on that lab, and then like some other guy was running like advertisement scamming on the same lab at the same time.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, it's just like,
I wonder if I was the reason that happened.
I don't know. No, it's like it was another employee that was running
it.
Oh,
that's hilarious. Oh,
I think
this is
happening. I think it was
after with,
you left.
I can't say anything. It'll reveal too much.
It was like, cause, and he was real big into like creating those like fake websites to do clickbait and earn
the
advertisement
pole dancing
money and
princess.
And so, yeah, and so it was just really funny that poor lab was used for so much stuff other than being a lab.
And that was even back before they didn't. That was back before they deleted all the root passwords.
So funny. It's just crazy. But as you can tell, we're going to wrap up here. We're going to kind of take a different approach to our show. In my opinion, I don't think it was working real well. I mean, it could have been. I mean, listeners, you might have been enjoying it. But I kind of wanted to... I sat down with a colleague of mine at a conference, and it was like, you know, these conferences are kind of a waste of time. But we learned so much whenever we get together with other people in our profession, and we just hear them talk. And you hear them talk about, like, this is going on at my campus. This is the problem I'm having. Oh, you know, I had that same problem. Here's what I did to solve it or whatever. And so it's like we both kind of came to the conclusion that, you know, that's kind of how we learn best. And so that's kind of the direction that I think we want to push our podcast to. As you can tell this week, it was just sort of a conversation about a whole bunch of random things. And maybe we can kind of keep it close to a single kind of topic or whatever. But I just kind of want the show to be kind of a conversation between me and Chris or a guest if we have another guest at some point. So I hope that if you're listening, you kind of enjoy that new format, because I can tell you this, to me, this show actually flowed, like just recording it now, a whole lot easier than following my show notes and list of links and stuff and going like that. So to me, it was a little bit easier to do this kind of recording than it was to follow like a layout. So, but
oh yeah, and I agree with you because dang it, we all know how ADD I am. And well, I add a little ADD with a little procrastination and I like to put stuff in those show notes about 20 minutes before we recorded.
Yeah, I do too. Like, I think I actually made the document like 2 days ago. So, I mean, and having a week off and I'm still far behind. But, you know, it's the nature of the beast too about working in education. It's like, it's just sometimes there's slow periods. Like the week before Thanksgiving was pretty much like we could have recorded a show every day. I mean, that's kind of how my schedule went. And Christmas, I mean, and not just, I mean, even Harvey, Hurricane stuff aside, that's typically how it goes for me. Even when I was at the service, as long as I've been in education, it's like the week before spring break, the week before Thanksgiving, the week before Christmas, everything just kind of slows down. And I don't know if it's because, like, things are happening in the classroom where things are kind of laxing up, or they're doing a lot of testing, and so they're not doing a lot of whole lot of technology stuff, so things aren't breaking, or they're not breaking things, rather. But it's just, to me, that's the way I've traditionally seen it. It's like things kind of slow down the week before. But the week after, when you get back, it's like a catastrophe. Oh, yeah. Well, because apparently,
being that I actually teach a class now, I have a little insight to what happens there. You don't want to start anything new before they're going to be gone, because you're just going to have to redo it anyway.
I mean, that makes complete sense. I mean, that may be why it's movie day. I had to go fix movie day in the classroom that's actually in the high school band hall right now. I had to go fix movie day. Well, I mean, they were watching a movie related to what they were teaching or whatever. But, I mean, that may be wise, because, like, they just don't want to, like, you don't really want to start new things on a Friday. I mean, you kind of do reviews on Friday. And so I get that, not wanting to start anything new. But, so, I mean, but that's just what we're trying to do everything we can to keep this from becoming a bi-weekly show. And so, yes. So maybe changing the format up a little bit, where it's a little bit more casual for us, where we don't have to, I don't want to say that we're lazy and don't want to prepare, but we're lazy and don't want to prepare a whole lot. It's like, we have...
You know, Matt, maybe we could get crazy and have a user call-in.
Oh, we're not even going to bother with that. That's too much work. But, I mean, it's like, we have these kinds of conversations. Now, granted, they're over chat and hangouts or whatever, but we have these types of conversations all week long. And so maybe it's like, hey, why don't we just record it? And so that's kind of what we're kind of hoping. In fact, we've gone like twice as long as what I wanted to actually make this podcast to be.
I bet editing's still going to be a lot easier.
Yeah, and I find myself just kind of like in my head as I'm going along. I've only kind of caught myself making like two things that I need to edit. Like just kind of mentally. Now, granted, when I do the listen back, I'm probably going to find a bunch more. But to me, it's like when we're just kind of conversing and having a conversation, I seem to do better than when I'm trying to stay structured. So, but
oh, cool.
But that's our show this week. I will stick with my ending script though, because that is pretty easy to do. If you have any feedback or regarding anything we've discussed or anything that you'd like to hear me and Chris talk about, just let us know. You can reach out to us on Twitter. Chris can be found at @Feeks and I'm @TwistOfMatt, or you can reach the show account at Educating Tech. You can also send us an email, educatingtech@gmail.com. And visit our webpage, educatingtech.net, where you can find links to past episodes, links to subscribe in your favorite podcast, all that fun stuff. But I guess that's it for this week, this extra long episode. I'm sitting at 1 hour and 8 minutes at my recording, so,
yep,
so much for
here.
My 30-minute show, right? But
it happens.
We'll see you later, Chris.
All right, later, Matt.